I did all this change and I woke up 3 years later and I felt totally different, but I didn't feel authentic and I didn't feel at home in myself. The intuition that guided me into that company was telling me to leave one of the best companies in Sweden and one of the best jobs and do nothing for a while. And if I can leave something that good, that also means that other people could leave whatever they are doing, and that is frightening for people.
Welcome to the New Age Human Podcast, where we have inspiring conversations with spiritual entrepreneurs in the areas of mindfulness, longevity, and innovative technology. I'm your host, John Astacio, and I'm on a mission to help humanity discover our human potential so we can together create positive change. Remember, the journey starts within. Please like and subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. And with that said, let's get to the show. All right. Today, we're talking with Sebastian Vendias. This guy is a transformational coach, senior embodiment teacher, and business transformation consultant. He is also the founder of Being Man. So if you consider yourself an entrepreneur with high empathy, looking to develop self-connection and self-leadership, you're not going to want to miss today's show. Sebastian, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Yeah. It's funny because we had a conversation about like a week or two ago, and you had an amazing story, and I'm like, this guy has been on a journey, and I love hearing about journeys. And you have an interesting business, you're helping a lot of people, and I would love for you to share your transformational journey of searching within, and this way we can lead into unpacking that. Do you mind sharing your story?
Of course. Yeah, thank you. It's been a while. It's been a journey. So, the journey started 20 years ago. So when I was 16 years old, and I had this overactive thinking mind that just kept getting more and more out of control every week. And I just knew I couldn't go in that direction. I knew I couldn't live like that. And I had this intuition that somehow I should be able to find a way to be comfortable in my own skin and easeful in my own being, but I knew I didn't have it. So, and I looked at my parents, I was like, I don't think they have it. I looked at my teachers in school and I was like, they don't have it. So how do I find the path? And I went to some internet forums. I found the whole world of personal development and self-help. And that was my first gateway drug into this journey. And I got obsessed with like the Tony Robbins and the NLP and a lot of the mind-based tools, and changed myself totally over the next 3 years, you know, working on my self-image, my goals, my beliefs, all of it just kept chipping away and changing because I wasn't comfortable with who I was and how I was thinking. But I did all this change and I woke up 3 years later and I felt totally different, but I didn't feel authentic and I didn't feel at home in myself. I just felt like a clone of Tony Robbins and, you know, I just taking on like his beliefs and society's expectations of who I thought I should be. And I was like, damn, like this is not me. I thought I was on the highway to everything there is in life, but I realized I was totally lost again. Which was quite painful at the moment. I got one really good insight out of that, though. Like, you know, first of all, those tools are powerful and used correctly. They can be really beneficial. But on their own, they don't make the whole journey home to yourself. But then I also had a really interesting insight when I was just started out, because I was changing all my thoughts. And I thought, wow, okay, but what is the part of me that is looking at and changing all my thought patterns? There's got to be more to me than just my thoughts. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's got to be a way out of my mind because there's got to be more to me than just my thinking mind. And that was kind of like my first spiritual glimpse.
That's interesting. Do you remember the trigger that got you to think that there's got to be more than my thoughts?
It was just an epiphany, right? I was just mixturing with my own thoughts. And, you know, there in NLP, there's all these techniques for like working with memories or self images and beliefs. And you can do certain things to change them and install new ones. And I was like, Okay, but there's a part of me that is installing the new one. So I cannot be the new one. Like, it's just something I'm installing. And right. I was like, wow, that's cool. Yeah, that's what is that part?
Yeah, no, I agree. So you're on this journey and you're like, I'm more than my thoughts because I am programming, but who am I? That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I've had the same, thoughts for sure, right? You're the facsimile of, or like a shadow of the gurus that had their own journeys and they're sharing what worked for them, but now you're working on what works for you. So go ahead. I just had to throw that in there. It's pretty cool to watch this, or at least listen to this happen to you.
Amazing. Yeah. So then, being kind of lost again and realizing that trying to change my thinking mind and push it down in my body and all my systems didn't work. And I started to study psychology. I heard about mindfulness, and I read in a book, it was just a sentence, but it said something about happiness and flow and mindfulness. And I was like, happiness and flow sounds about right. That's kind of what I'm looking for. Like, what the fuck is mindfulness? I had never heard about it, 17 years ago or something. Took an audio program with Jon Kabat-Zinn, the American mindfulness teacher, and had a really, really profound experience just 3 weeks in, where I just, time and space dissolved, and I just felt fully at home in myself. And I was like, whoa, there is such a thing as this easeful being in myself. And it felt so good. And as I was having that experience, and I don't remember if that lasted for 2 minutes or 2 days, I have no idea. But I was like, okay, I'm not really ready to live like this yet. This is just a glimpse. And the experience disappeared a few days later, and I got harder and harder to get back to it. So I got obsessed with meditation because that is what brought me that experience. So I went to all the Vipassana retreats, and I started to basically do 8 hours of meditations a day home in my own apartment in Gothenburg, because I thought it's only a 2 or 3 weeks away until I uncover that experience again. But those 2 or 3 weeks turned into 2.5 years of 8 hours of meditations a day.
That is insane. Okay.
Yeah. So that was me between 21 and 23, 24. And it really helped me still and change my overactive thinking mind. But still, even coming out of on the other side of that, feeling like more at ease and more in attune, I was still lacking that felt sense of like just authenticity or knowing who I am or feeling like my own power or my own authenticity. I still felt blocked in so many ways.
So hold on. 8 hour day meditations for 2 years. So you were meditating as a full-time job, literally.
Yeah, basically. I went to university and took some easy courses so that I can get the study loan so that I can keep on doing my meditation.
I was going to say, like, when do you eat in between those 8 hours? Like, do you meditate during your eating? Because traditionally, or what most people, especially on the in the Western world, it's you're sitting down, legs folded, and you're just not doing anything. So I'm just curious, during those 8 hours, were you actively like being in active meditation where like you're eating, but that's still considered meditation because where your mindset is? I'm curious, what was going on during those 8 hours?
It's been a long time. I think I usually chunked it up in 2 hour slots. So I was, doing 2 hours, either sitting or lying down. So it could be body scans. It could be focusing on my breathing. There could be heartscape meditations. And then I just took a break and had food and went for a walk or did some school, like study work or whatever, and then had another chunk. But yeah.
Okay. Now I'm digesting it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's wild. Yeah, for anybody. Don't recommend that's it. That, there are better ways, but those were the tools I had.
Right.
So, and I was so hungry for this experience that I just kept on chipping away with the tools I had at the time.
Interesting. And so even 8 hours a day, you still had some blockages. Something was like you said, right? You had some blockages, like just something was missing still, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let me come back to that because that is really a big part of like understanding those blockages. But I didn't have access to what that was at that time. But after those years, I came out of 24, 25, and I felt quite good. I felt good in myself. I felt, you know, my mind was pretty much at ease. And I was like, okay, let's, because I'm an explorer at heart and an adventurer. I was like, okay, let's see what I can build in this external world. So business, lifestyle, and all of that. And went into the business world in a very entrepreneurial company in Sweden and ended up in a key position of building what is now one of the leading consulting firms in the European Union, and was on a very exponential journey with that company. And I was doing merger and acquisitions. I was buying companies of consultants and transforming that whole organization and businesses. And I had a lifestyle, you know, I spent a lot of money on dating coaches to understand women, because I've had some holes in my understanding that I needed to learn, and built a lifestyle that was global. And I just built this external, amazing, really amazing life. Wow. And when I was, you know, 6 years ago, when I was 30, I had, you know, literally one of the best jobs in Sweden. I was top 1% income earners. I was traveling the world, was dating amazing women, and I enjoyed it. It's not one of those stories where I was like, oh, and I was empty inside. Like, no, I really enjoyed it. And I especially enjoyed the adventure of building it. Mm. And yet still I was sitting there at 30 and I was like, this can't be it. Like, there's still something missing. Like, it doesn't taste as sweet as it should taste. Mm. And about that time, I would say that's where my real healing journey started. I just met that summer at 30. I just met one of my main teachers for the first time. Her name is Judith Blackstone, and she's the founder of the Realization Process, which is this modality of guided practices for cultivating deep internal connection with yourself throughout your whole body. Mm-hmm. I'd spent 5 days with her in the US in a workshop. And I remember in that workshop, I was thinking after it that I had finally found a teacher and a modality that could guide me all the way home to myself and explain why I wasn't already, why I haven't been able to uncover that experience for so many years of trying.
Interesting.
And yeah.
So that was it for you. That was it. You're like, you landed.
Well,
so
it was
sweet tasting.
It was just the experience I had been looking for. And it was just a new experience because I never knew what it would really look and feel like. But yeah, I for sure had that deep intuition sitting with her and experiencing her practices. And I came back, you know, after the summer break to work, after the vacation, and I just couldn't do any work. I just couldn't do what I used to be doing. I was like, wow, my head was just hurting. And I forced myself into it for a few months. And then I was like, no, this is it. Like, it's time to leave. The wow. same intuition that guided me into that company was telling me to leave one of the best companies in Sweden and one of the best jobs and do nothing for a while. Like, just see what happens when I leave and make space for something new.
So wait, you left that job without a plan, or was it that you left the job open for a new plan? Like, you didn't leave it for another one. Like, that was your income, yeah. And you were doing fantastic financially. Very interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah,
process.
So I heard about
What did your boss say? Like, what was that conversation like?
Yeah, it was very hard for people to understand because everybody assumed that something bad had happened.
Yeah,
because like, how could you not? You know, why are you leaving? And because my plan was to take 6 months to a year off, and live on saved money, and you know, see what comes up next. Because I knew that if I would choose my next thing right away, I would be something similar. And I wanted to get like the 360 view of like, what can I, where can I go from here? Just because I became good at this doesn't mean that is what I should be doing the rest of my life. And it was really hard, of course. The CEO and the company tried to make me stay or offer me different ways of, you know, staying in the company. And yeah, it was mostly triggering for most of the other people who knew me, because they were like, okay, are you, something bad happened? Like, no, not really. Okay. Are you starting your own company? Like, are you going to like a better job? I was like, no, I don't know. Maybe. Like, I don't know. And it just irritated them. I actually, after saying that for a few times, I changed my way, because people got so frustrated, because I think partly it was because I had something that many people strive to, and I choose to leave it. And if I can leave something that good, that also means that other people could leave whatever they are doing. And that is frightening for people. That's like, wow, I could be, maybe I should think about what I want to do. So after, you know, saying it for a few times, I was just like, yeah, I will probably move abroad or start my own company. I was like, oh, okay, I don't want to move abroad and I don't want to start my own company. Okay, I don't have to think about this more. Good for you. Good luck.
Yeah, that's interesting. You're like, all right, I got to come up with a story just because they keep bothering me. And did family do the same thing? I can only imagine.
I mean, I've taken quite extreme journeys already. So they were like, oh, okay. Cool. It's like, I'm on such a different journey than my family. Like, they were like, okay, like, I guess you figure it out.
So you've taken so many chances and done okay that they're just like, go for it, you know? He's going to do that thing again. Go for it. Which is, yeah. And I do want to point out that, like you said, there's a lot of people that we get the same story, or we get told the same path, right? Just when you go to school and then you take a college course, or even just a technical something, and the education continues into a landing point for a job. Very few times do you hear like, go and find yourself. Usually that journey is like high school. during school, like it's not part of the family journey, unfortunately, right? It's one of those things where you have to do it on your own. And you found like the dream job. And there's so many people out there, right, that are like, oh, one of these days I'm going to land that dream job, or I'm going to turn this into the dream job. And then to hear a story like yours saying, I said peace. I said, I'm out. I'm done. And I didn't really have a reason why that I can share easily, which means that easily, whatever you experienced, and that we're going to go deeper into on today's conversation, was much bigger than what you were dealing with, which is like what a lot of social media shows, like the goals. And what you saw was like, beyond that, like just way beyond. So let's get into what you found and how does that work.
And I think something that might resonate with your audience is that through all the meditation I did, I did learn to cultivate a very deep inward listening. So ever since, I've been following, and I started in different, you know, levels of trusting it and seeing if it actually worked. But this deep, you can call it intuition or inward listening or just following resonance. And that is what guided me into this company. And it was an interesting story for another time of how I got into that company in the first place, because it wasn't just a straight path in there. And then that's also, and then of course making this super career, and then that same resonance disappeared. I was no longer with the company. It was leading me somewhere else, and I just knew that is the resonance that is giving me pretty much everything I have in my life, following that. And for me, I trust that more than any Excel spreadsheets of how much money I can make, or, you know. So that is what guided me out of there. And then, of course, what happened is that I found this work, I found this teacher, I found some really skilled mentors and therapists, and I started to lay a really big foundation of deeper and deeper self-connection real self-connection with myself and understanding what self-connection really is, or uncovering our true self and living from our core. And those were all just concepts to me before I was guided into the actual experience of it. And part of why most of us are not having those experiences, I learned, is because of the protective strategies and holding patterns that we create throughout our childhoods to protect ourselves, to be safe, to be seen, to be loved. And it turned out for me that I had a very traumatic childhood that I had suppressed. So especially up until 5-6 years of age, I had a lot of horrible things happening to me. And those were things that were not safe to tell anybody. So because it wasn't safe to tell anybody about them, it wasn't safe for me to know them because I might slip. So the safest thing for that brilliant mind at 5 years old was to suppress them and lock them down into my body and not have access to it. And this came up to me, 4 or 5 years ago in deep therapy work. And my childhood memories started to come back, and through this embodiment work and working with these patterns I had in my body that was blocking me from experiencing myself and finding myself more deeply. And that was the real journey. The real healing journey was uncovering these things and finding the memories and saving all those young boys. So basically I'm taking the whole trauma trajectory, trauma menu from very, very small things to very, very big things, and learning how to heal from all of them.
It's interesting. Your mind kept it from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, it kept it from you, those childhood traumas, your entire life until you finally were able to uncover it. Do you think or believe that it was those traumas that was below the surface that was trying to get out? And that was what a lot of your journey was about, was like something about this like doesn't fit because it's related to those traumas.
For sure. No, for sure. That I'm 100% sure now that when I was 16 and, late puberty and becoming a man, and things were blocked off in strange way in my body, that my system was not functioning as it should. And there was so much suppressed fear and anxiety. And I didn't know why. So it was just a mind fuck, because I didn't have access to the source of the symptoms. And I was trying to deal with these symptoms in so many different ways. So yeah, that is for sure what started the whole journey.
Wow. And I'm like, there's so many ways we can go about this. So we're at the point in the story where you uncovered your childhood traumas, and it sounds like from the age of like 5 to 16, there was just like piles and piles and piles. Do you see your clients? Do you see that as a theme? Like, what are you seeing in your clients? Are you attracting similar people that had a similar background? Like, I'm curious what you're seeing as you're helping people with their transformations.
So not really, in the sense that if people are coming and uncovering like really big traumas, they don't. I'm not the guy. I'm not a skilled therapist. I'm not a trained therapist. So even though I've been through that journey, and some people choose to work with me, both men and women, alongside a therapist, that's not really what I'm doing. But the interesting thing is that I work with people who have high empathy or high sensitivity. They might be, just using different words to describe the same thing. And sometimes people say, what do you mean by that? And the way I look at it is, it's people who have the capacity, or not even the capacity, they take in a lot of information and often a lot of social information. So if they go into a room, they're able to read the moods, like what's really going on under the surface, and very, very sensitive to these things, which can be a superpower, especially like in social business and stuff. But it can also be overwhelming because there's so much information coming in and being processed and you don't know how to turn it off. So, and if you are sensitive like that, when you grow up as a sensitive child, the world is different than, you live in a different world than somebody who's not that sensitive. Because you pick up more cues and things that doesn't seem, let's say your parents have had a fight and they're trying to hide it. And if you're very sensitive to those kind of things, it's obvious to you that your parents are fighting. And as a child, you'll be like, oh, maybe they're getting a divorce. Maybe this has to do with me. So you get all of the effects of knowing. And if you have a brother who is not, or a sister who is not that sensitive, they're like, oh, everything is good. So there's nothing for them to protect themselves from. So a lot of people with that high sensitivity do cultivate like more and deeper protective patterns in their childhoods. Doesn't have to be big trauma. It can be very, very small things like not feeling safe at schools, in the school, seeing somebody, if you're a man, for example, seeing another man abuse his power and deciding like, I'm never going to be a man like that. And by that, choosing unconsciously, but squeezing your own power and not have access to your own power to protect yourself from becoming a man like that. There's so many creative ways we constrict ourselves. And I think we all have that as human beings. It's just a part of being a human being and growing up in this world. But highly sensitive and highly empathetic people have more of that. So the people I attract they're often entrepreneurial. They are highly sensitive and they have found a way to use this high sensitivity to their advantage. So they're often, you know, in positions of success or, you know, they have companies or they're successful in the business world or like in a career, or they know that they can be. And there's still something nagging them that like they are still longing for that same thing that I was longing for, feeling more at ease internally, of feeling whole and being kinder to themselves and feeling just, you know, more stable.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Totally. I consider myself one of those people, right? And I see it as, from my experience, overworking and overprocessing and overanalyzing just because of your childhood of feeling the need to do so. Right. My parents divorced when I was like, I think 3. Mm-hmm. And so I have very, very young memories of being 2, 3. And it's a different world, completely different world. And then to see siblings, you know, half brothers and sisters be completely different or experience a different childhood, you get to see the difference of mindset. And then when you connect with other people, you do find out that people that are similar to you with the overprocessing and many times, like you said, have found success and went on the entrepreneurial route because, I mean, it doesn't take too much processing to realize that, you know, having your own business brings more freedom and more income potential, right? So it totally makes sense why someone would do that. And so I do feel what you're talking about. And then at the same time, it's interesting, that's your tribe. You went through the process. You found the solution that works for you because of your journey and what you're experiencing. And now you're attracting people that are literally going through the same process. So that's really cool where it's like, you know, you're living the journey. You slay the dragon, so to speak, and now you're literally just helping people slay their own dragons, which is really, really cool.
It is really cool. I mean, that is the lotus flower of all that mud, right? Coming out of it, being able to bring all these tools back to people who might not have to go where I have gone to find all the tools and might not have the, you know, because of the traumas, I had to go so deep to find and see what really works. And most of the people I attract we all have trauma and we all have childhood experiences that have shaped us. And because I've gone so deep, I've been through most of the layers. And then even if people don't have to go as deep, I can help them where they are. And that's really helpful for them to know as well. No, I was just going to go a little bit into where I'm, what I'm doing now, but I hand it back to you to lead where we go next.
I'm literally, we're on the same flow. I'm like, okay, so how are you helping people right now with that? Like, what are, you were talking about tools, right? So let's get into some of those tools. I'm curious what tools you're using to help people. And then anybody listening, what tools can they use right now?
Yeah, so the tools, my view on personal transformations and the journey home to yourself is that everybody needs to find their own toolbox. So we are all, I'm no absolutist about any tools. There are so many good tools. I put a PowerPoint slide or Canva slide together the other day with like 30 great tools, and there's probably 300. And so I think it's the most important thing is for people to find their own tools that work for them where they are right now, because sequence matter. What you need now might be different than what you need 2 years from now. But that said, there are a few tools that I wouldn't trade for anything because I needed them. They were crucial for my own journey. And one of them is this, what I call true embodiment. And that is different than body awareness, which a lot of mindfulness practices teach us, like body scans, where we tend to often, if we pay attention, we are mostly in the head, kind of like looking down or feeling down into the body. And this embodiment, the true embodiment that I call it, that I based off the realization process, so this modality that Judith Blackstone, this amazing American spiritual teacher, has developed over 45 years and refined, that was the thing that I could not have done my journey without. So I really recommend her work. I ended up becoming a senior teacher because I took so many trainings and went so deep in that work for 6 years. So I teach it, I use it in my work, and but that is for sure a cornerstone of the one of the modalities I recommend.
Okay, and can you give us a little bit of an insight of that experience of using that modality that you would teach?
I could. The thing with it is that it's depending on how much time we want to spend on it, right? Because it's experiential. So it's all about uncovering an experience in yourself of who you are. So your true, the experience of being your true self. And it's an actual tangible experience that is stable that we can rest in. So if we do this work for a while, we actually transform the way we, like our self-identity. We go from thinking about who we are and holding on to thoughts. I am a teacher. I am a podcaster. I am a entrepreneur. To uncovering the experience of who we are and saying, I know who I am because I experience who I am in this moment. And that shift, you know, you have to do the practices. I can give you a super quick 4-minute taste of the embodiment versus awareness. Or maybe that's for another podcast or a free workshop or something. But
what does the 4-minute entail? Is it a meditation? Is it, what is that?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a very, 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 very brief practice of like just entering into the hands instead of being aware of the hands.
I think since we got there, I think we should go for it. I'm down.
All right. Let's do it quickly. So, okay. So for anybody listening, make sure you're not driving or doing anything where you need to pay attention. And you can just sit somewhere where you're comfortable and safe with your eyes closed, your back straight, feet on the floor helps. And you just put your hands on your lap. And just landing here, you can become aware of your hands. And you might notice the temperature, you might notice the air, you might notice some tingling, you might notice the contact between your hands and your legs. And you might notice that you're mostly in your head, in your mind, kind of like looking down, finding your hands down there. So now, enter into your hands. Feel that you are present and alive within your hands. And it feels like you have a pair of gloves on your hands that perfectly fit your hands. And you're filling out those gloves with yourself, all the way out to the fingertips. So you're not just aware of your hands. Feel that you are that internal space of your hands. And you might or might not have experienced a difference today, but with some practice, you will notice that there's a difference between this kind of embodiment and awareness from the mind. And it's a very, very important difference in order to uncover this experience of wholeness within ourselves and also this experience of oneness with other people and with life. So you can let go of this practice. You know, the intro practice, the real one is 25 minutes, but you can sit for a few moments and come out of this practice when you're ready.
Well, that was interesting.
Did you notice a difference?
I noticed that my perspective is confused right now because I'm like, I gotta speak into the mic, but it's almost like my hands are like my ears because my perspective went from looking down to being between my hands. And so I'm like, what is it like to be a hand? You know, like, is my arm my pinky and the other arm my thumb? You know, and so like just being, I guess, I was like, where's my perspective? And I felt a little bit of tingling because that's where your focus is, right? But that's definitely like one of those, like, it definitely changes your perspective for sure. For sure. Interesting. So it sounds like that a lot of that work is either being your hands, being different parts of your body, like some days.
So it's not about being, it's not about being your hands. It's just about, we do that through the whole body and we uncover this, like it helps us cultivate deeper self-connection throughout the whole body. And then what happens, interestingly, is that when we have cultivated enough self-connection, doesn't have to be perfect, but enough self-connection within our whole body, this experience of wholeness that all the spiritual traditions speaks about spontaneously arises. The thing that I've been looking for 15 years, when I reached enough self-connection internally throughout the whole body, spontaneously arising, and I experience myself and the world differently. And it's the most obvious thing when you feel it, but it's an experience, and before you have tasted the experience, it's like trying to explain what chocolate tastes like for somebody who have never tasted chocolate.
Yeah.
It's it.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
You know, the analogy that came up for me, and tell me if I'm wrong, is let's say a lot of people hopefully have had an experience driving a car or owning a car, a vehicle. And after a while, things fall apart. You have the check engine light that pops on, or the oil, or something's blinking, and let's say that could be something that happened to you, and sometimes we turn up the volume because you hear like this weird noise, and it's probably something you need to fix, and so you turn up the volume on the radio so you don't have to deal with it, and maybe you find a way to turn off that check engine light, even though you didn't literally check the engine, you just turned off the light, and we just go on with our lives with loud music and finding really good ways to turn off those lights or find noises to cover the internal noises. And when you reconnect to your body, the check engine lights become louder and the noises become louder because you turned off the music and you started to really work on not ignoring those lights and finding different ways to do it, which would be like external bandages, right? You just throw a Band-Aid on. It's a fancy Band-Aid. It was expensive. And I, you know, I left my hometown just to get that one Band-Aid. Is that a decent analogy as far as like,
yeah,
that journey?
I think it speaks to the other side of that coin of the embodiment, because what happens is that we, as we mentioned before, we all have these protective patterns. And as we start to cultivate with these guided practices that are, you know, between 10 and 30 minutes long, we start to cultivate this deeper self-connection throughout the body. We also start to notice where we have no connection or where it feels constricted or where we hold tension. We might be like, oh, I can't find my midsection. I just can't find it.
That's bad.
You know, and that's how it is for all of us when we start this work, because we have constricted in different ways. But as we are doing this work, first of all, some of those protective patterns go away. They actually dissolve and we can feel ourselves more deeply. And then where we hold firm constrictions, we can actually work with some release techniques, with our own mind finding these constrictions in the body, and maybe with a skilled therapist if needed, to unwind these protective patterns. And when we open them up, it gives us access. Let's say we've been constricting in our voice, for example, and we can actually work on both inhabiting, you know, this area, but also finding where we're holding back and access the memory of why we started to hold back our voice. And when that opens, when we open up at one place in our body, it actually cultivates a deeper embodiment through the whole body. And that becomes like a journey, because then we have even more inward connection. And then the next thing can come up that wants to be looked at and released. And that becomes like a healing and deepening, you know, journey in its own, together with other modalities. And there's so many things that can help us, but if speaking from this perspective.
Yeah. And yeah, I see a lot of it is first finding what is needed and then figure out how to handle it, how to figure it, like how to deal with it. And sometimes, like you said, it dissolves. Sometimes it requires more work, but shedding a light on it is like the biggest thing, because you can go through your entire life having no idea what's nagging at you. And I appreciate the work that you're doing. I know a lot of people need it for obvious reasons. And now is the time to really hone in on that type of work, because it's needed, I would say, in my opinion, now more than ever, for sure. I do want to get into, you did mention that you are working on some new projects, and I want to give you some time to share that, especially if someone wants to connect with you and wants to know what's next for you.
Amazing. Thank you. Yeah. So, you know, I already mentioned the kind of people I attract, the entrepreneurial, highly empathetic, often quite successful people already, men and women, in my one-on-one work. And when it comes to what I'm building, I've had this project came to me 5 years ago called, like, the name came to me, it's Being Man, and it's at beingman.com. And it came to me because I'd been thinking for many years, like, what does it mean to be a man or even a masculine man in this modern world? And I had read all the David Tieta books. I'd read so much about the masculine and the feminine. And in my mind, I thought I could debate anybody about what it means, the right way of being a man, the right archetype to be. But in my experience, it never felt true. It always felt hollow. So as I went deeper with the embodiment work, and that changed my perspective, and I understood that there's no such thing as a right way of being a man. But there is processes and teachings and modalities that can help all of us, for women, of course, as well. But right now I'm focusing on men, to uncover our own true nature, come into our own core. And in being man, it's the empathy is on being, of uncovering that beingness. And the man part mostly takes care of itself when we uncover and open up all of our abilities and who we are. So I basically take in everything I've learned in the last 20 years and I put them into programs and retreats for these kind of men. So I'm doing a 6-month group program that is, you know, I'm starting a new cohort every 3 months or so. It's been fantastic going on a transformational journey through 12 workshops, you know, through 6 months. So that's my main focus when it comes to my work, like bringing being man more deeply into the world, and but also in my one-on-one work, working with anyone who resonates and is in on this kind of journey.
Nice. And that's a journey. 6 months. Let's go.
That is a journey for sure.
Yeah. And I like how you know who you're attracting, right? And you're catering to that vibe, to that tribe. And also how, like you said, and you mentioned it before, how it's, yes, it's focused mostly on men, but you do work with women as well. And I like how you're not saying, you know what, forget you. Like, hey, you know what, if you need it and if you're attracted to my work, then let's go. And I like that because everybody has a different journey and you never know what's going to work for you until you go for it.
Love working with women. I mean, if I would make a business decision solely, you know, because women are further along than men, I would say right now. And women are already in onto this. And I think that is why this project wants to come through, because there's a need for men. And I really want to create a platform where men who are ready to do this work can feel included and feel safe to step into it. And for many men, for whatever reason, it's easier to do this work when it's in a community of other men, seeing that other men are doing it and might even be taught by a man. So that is, you know, it's not about excluding women. It's about including men into this work. That's my premise.
And that makes 100% sense. And thank you for clarifying that. So with that said, yeah, anybody who's interested in learning a little bit more about being man and wanting to connect with Sebastian, all the information will be in the show notes. But if you're listening right now and you want to know right now, Sebastian, what's the best way to contact with you?
Yeah, so I said two ways. If you're a man and you're drawn to this, go to beingman.com. There's all the information. You can send out a book a free exploration call, or just send me a note. Or you can find me on Instagram. It's Sebastian Vendius in one word. And you can just follow me and send me a DM, and we take it from there.
All right. Sounds good. You heard the man. Thank you for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate you. Yeah, I enjoyed the journey.
Thank you for having me on.